Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined by Louisa Peacock and John Charlton. Coming up, latest developments in the Agency Workers Directive and an update on employees' entitlement to legal representation at disciplinary hearings. But first, the news. Nearly two-thirds of employees would rather work for a small business than a large corporate, a survey has found. 60% of the 1,400 staff surveyed by recruitment firm Angela Mortimer said that if a small firm and a corporate offered a similar salary, they'd opt for the small firm. Only 20% of employees said that working for a market leader was important. A report from the Women in Work Commission has found that HR departments are not doing enough to close the gender pay gap. The gap for full-time roles has grown from 12.5% in 2007 to 12.8%. For part-time roles, the gap is 22.6%, up from 21.9% in 2007. TUC's Secretary General Brendan Barber said, "A good HR department can easily reduce and even eradicate pay gaps." Staff at Carlisle City Council will be disciplined if they complain about cuts to their pay packet, according to local paper The Cumberland News. The paper claims to have seen a confidential email from the head of personnel, David Williams, detailing the threat. It claims the email said, "Expressing dissatisfaction about a job evaluation score is not a grievance. Malicious use of any procedure, including this one, could invoke disciplinary action against the employee." The debate continues in our online forum, HR Space. We'd love to hear your views there. Go to hrspace.co.uk. Louisa, you're going to update us on the Agency Workers Directives?
That's right, thanks Tara. The Agency Workers Directive consultation, which has been running for a couple of months now, closes today. That's Friday the 31st of July. But employers groups have said that throughout the consultation they've been left with little clarity and little knowledge of exactly what they're consulting on, because the wording in the European Directive is so complicated that they can't actually work out, for example, what agency workers are entitled to and what they're not entitled to if the new law comes in.
Can you tell us what additional rights agency workers will get, Louisa, once the law comes into effect?
That's right. Well, the whole point of this directive is to give agency workers more rights, and to give them the same rights, in fact, as permanent staff after just 12 weeks in a job. In the directive, the wording says it will give them equal treatment. However, this phrase, equal treatment, caused quite a lot of upset. We know it includes health and safety legislation. We know it includes giving them the minimum wage, at least. We know it includes giving them paid holiday. And due to other law, it will also mean that they get 28 days holiday per year. But what it won't include is redundancy pay. So for example, if the employer wants to get rid of agency workers 6 months into the contract, they won't get redundancy pay and they won't get a notice period. So equal treatment is really confusing, because they'll get some rights but they won't get others.
Isn't it the case that they've already got a lot of these rights anyway, such as statutory holiday pay?
Yeah, I mean, you'd get statutory holiday pay, you should be paid the minimum wage under separate minimum wage law, and of course you'd be under anti-discrimination laws in this country, you'd be protected under that anyway. So yeah, there is a lot of debate out there as to why the directive is coming in its current form, and you know, why agency workers need this. I mean, the TUC have been calling for years, that saying that agency workers and temporary staff are exploited in the UK and they're vulnerable to not being paid properly and etc. But you know, really these problems should be sorted out by other laws anyway.
Has the CIPD had anything to say about this, Louisa?
Yeah, well, advisor Mike Emmer has added that the directive is unclear about what the benchmark is for comparison between permanent and temporary staff. So how would you? I mean, there's so many different types of roles in the temporary market. How can you compare them to a permanent employee? So Mike Emmer said that pay comparisons for agency temps should be based on internal pay scales applying to a comparable worker with the organisation doing broadly similar work. Meanwhile, various other commentators have said that the AWD, that's the Agency Workers Directive, in its current form, could leave full-time staff feeling aggrieved, because agency workers, for example, will now be entitled to pensions, could possibly be entitled to bonuses after just 12 weeks in a job. So obviously, if you've been in that job for 5 years and haven't got a bonus yet, but someone comes in and they've been there for 3 months and gets a bonus, it could cause all sorts of staff problems.
What's to stop agencies giving temporary workers, say, contracts lasting only 11 weeks?
Well, that's the fear, I think, from the unions and I guess the workers themselves, that especially, you know, in the recession at the moment, temporary work is seen as the saviour. It's going to be how everyone starts getting reapplied to the workforce again. But as soon as employers realise they're going to have to start paying them, you know, giving them all the same rights, permanent staff, they might well get to 11 weeks and think, right, we'll get rid of them before we need to put them on our permanent books, as it were. So that is a big fear at the moment.
Louisa, what's the scope of the directive, in as much as how many or what percentage of agency staff will it actually cover?
Well, this is another question, John, that isn't black and white, I'm afraid. The Institute of Directors wrote to the European Commission recently asking that very question. And the European Commission came back and said that 90% of temps in the private sector, in fact, don't really need to be covered by this directive. Well, John, that's another question that hasn't got a black and white answer, I'm afraid. The Institute of Directors wrote to the European Commission recently asking that very question, and the European Commission said that the directive should only cover temps who work at organisations with formalised pay scales, that's pay and grading structures. But we know that loads and loads of small businesses and medium-sized businesses don't adhere to formalised pay scales. They work out pay on a one-to-one basis. So under that point of law, therefore, it's argued that about 90% of temps out there, 90% of agency workers, who have their pay worked out on a one-to-one basis with their employer, shouldn't actually be covered by the AWD anyway.
What are the next steps, Louisa?
Well, we know that the AWD must come into force in the UK by the 5th of December 2011. The Department for Business is obviously finishing its first consultation today, but a spokesman told me that they will be consulting again later on in the year on the actual regulations. So I think that's their way of saying that the equal treatment wording and everything that everyone's worried about, that will be cleared up towards the end of the year, and people will have a chance to have their say again. And then, of course, the final decision on how the government implements the directive will be taken then.
You are listening to the weekly podcast from personneltoday.com.
Right, John, you're going to update us on employees' entitlement to legal representation at disciplinary hearings.
Yes, Tara. This is the second case this year which has looked at the legal right, or the right to legal representation at a disciplinary hearing. This one involves a junior doctor called Dr. Kunal Kulkarni, and the Milton Keynes Hospital Trust. Dr. Kulkarni was disciplined some years ago following a complaint by a patient that he had placed a stethoscope under her underwear without her consent. He wanted to bring his lawyer to the disciplinary hearing, but this request was refused. So then he took his case through the legal system, and it recently reached the Court of Appeal. The Court of Appeal decided to overturn an earlier High Court decision and has held that Dr. Kulkarni does have a right to legal representation. And it specifically based this ruling on a contract entitlement to legal representation in a Department of Health document applicable to doctors and dentists in England. However, according to legal people we've spoken to, this case has implications beyond the medical field and the public sector field even.
So why would this apply to fields beyond medicine, John?
Well, the Court of Appeal took a view that Dr. Kulkarni was entitled under human rights law to legal representation to secure his right to a fair trial, by which I mean a fair disciplinary hearing. So once we start getting into human rights territory, then clearly this has wider implications for employers. According to Jennifer Hancock, senior solicitor in the Employment Department of Brodie's, she says this is not just a concern for public sector employers, whose employees can, as things stand, bring a freestanding claim for breach of their human rights, but it could also have implications for other employers. And she says employers in regulated sectors, which include finance, education and the medical sectors, should give careful consideration to requests for legal representation where the disciplinary charges may be relied on or referred to by a professional or regulatory body, which would be the case in the areas mentioned. However, she points out that leave to appeal has been granted and further debate is likely. It's worth commenting that this follows an earlier decision in a school case, High Court decision in the case of R v Governors of X School. This related to a charge of sexual misbehaviour at school, so no one was named, where G was a music assistant accused of having an inappropriate relationship with a 15-year-old boy, and the High Court ruled that he did have a right to legal representation on account of the gravity of the likely consequences should the disciplinary charge be upheld.
But how much of an issue is this for HR professionals? Because presumably if the defendants can now bring legal representation with them to an internal case, you know, what's the big deal?
Obviously, as things stand, you can bring a colleague or a union representative to a disciplinary hearing. I think HR managers, HR directors would be quite worried if someone facing a disciplinary brings along a lawyer. You know, that would move it into a whole new territory and may compel, should it happen, obviously the HR manager, the company, the employer would probably want to have their own lawyer present, because you're into a whole new, more complex game.
So it's increasing costs potentially and increasing the bureaucracy of getting together notes for disciplinary hearings and whatnot.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that this would happen too often, but I think what we need to bear in mind is that these cases have now gone on to further appeals. So I think what happens in those appeals will have, the real bearing, as it were, on what could happen in internal disciplinaries as regards legal representation. Mm. But I think once human rights is invoked, then you're on a long and winding road.
Do you think we're looking at a situation where issues that could have been dealt with at disciplinary will not now, because people are concerned about the legal implications, they're concerned about the enhanced gravity of disciplinaries now? Is that going to have an impact?
Difficult to say. I think it's unlikely. I think it's unlikely that employees are going to be demanding legal representation. But in certain circumstances, they may well do, depending on the gravity of the case. I think if an employee could lose their livelihood, if they lose the disciplinary, if they lose their job, then they'll have greater grounds for demanding legal representation following these decisions.
Anything else to bear in mind, John?
Well, yeah, one thing here that's pointed out by Jennifer Hancock, who we mentioned before at Brodie's, she says that even if there's no contractual right to have legal representation at disciplinary, requests should not be systematically refused where the disciplinary hearing is likely to have implications beyond the employee's immediate employment.
Thank you, John. Log on to personneltoday.com to see how that story develops. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thanks for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views from the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. That's hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.